mentor apprentice programs, effects on mentors and apprentices' well-being, from Barbara Jenny, Adar Unsman, Peter Jacobs, and Noah MacGyver, all from the University of Victoria. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to our talk today. Thank you for the introduction. Although Adar and I are speaking today, we're part of a larger group than the Solness Project, which can be translated in the Sinchapan language as One Mind, One People. This is a community university Indigenous research partnership. I'd like to acknowledge Onawa and Peter. They're the co-leaders or investigators of the project. I also like to acknowledge our co-applicants, Anne Marshall and Suzanne Wessler. I'm not sure if Suzanne is here. And of course, our wonderful community partners. We're working with the Saanich School Board. Thai is the representative here. Hi. And the First Peoples Cultural Council. The Saanich School Board and the FPCC are both on Vancouver Island, located in Brentwood Bay. The Saanich School Board works within their own community, whereas the First Peoples Cultural Council provides programs and supports for language and culture programs across the entire province of British Columbia. We also have a wonderful team of collaborators and research assistants with diverse backgrounds. Today, we're going to first talk a little bit about the project overall. We're just going to situate what our research is about before we describe the framework that we use to explore links between language and health. And then we're happy to show you some results. Adar's going to take over now.
Okay, so I'm just going to give you a quick overview of language situation in British Columbia. So this is British Columbia. And it is the home of most of the Indigenous languages in Canada, 34 languages. You can see them all the different colors, that each one of those splotches is a different language. And all this diversity is at risk. Every single one of those languages is endangered. If you're looking at fluent speakers, they make about 4% of the population. But at the same time, language learners make over 9% of the population. And if you're looking at the population of speakers, 1% of the fluent speakers are under the age of 25, but this age group makes 29% of the SEM speakers and nearly 80% of all the learners. So a little bit about the rationale for our study. As a lot of you know, children were initially the main focus of the Indigenous language revitalization movement. But at the same time, there's this growing demographic of adults of this generation that fell between the cracks. And they do want to learn, and they do want to teach the language, and they do want to pass it on to their own children. So there isn't actually a lot of research about this population of those adult speakers, those adult learners. So what we did in this study is we looked at one specific approach for adult Indigenous language learners, which is pretty popular in British Columbia, and that's the Mentor Apprentice Program. So the Mentor Apprentice Program is based on Leanne Hinton's Master Apprentice Program. Just a little background about that. The idea is to create new adult speakers by pairing a fluent speaker, often an elder, with an adult learner. And this pair creates their own immersion context, trying to live English as much out as possible. They've decided their own activities, whether it's going to be going out on the land or doing things in the house or going to cultural events. They're meeting for about 15 to 20 hours a week. And a little bit about what we did in the study. This is a qualitative study. We interviewed participants in Mentor Apprentice. The largest group of our interviewees were the new and current learners. We had up to 6 interviews at certain intervals during their time in Mentor Apprentice. Some of them we started interviewing right at the beginning, some of them after a year that they've already participated in Mentor Apprentice. And we were following their progression through Mentor Apprentice. We also interviewed once a group of 10 successful learners who have completed 3 years in Mentor Apprentice. For one interview each. We interviewed 22 current and past mentors about their own experiences in Mentor Apprentice as mentors. And we also interviewed the program administrators and see what they think about the program and what they think are the important parts of it and achievements. We had a total of 138 interviews with 60 participants over a period of 2 years. We asked them open-ended questions. We didn't, we focused on motivation, on successes, on challenges, on the impact on their lives. We didn't actually ask them any questions about health. And then we conducted content analysis of their answers. Now I'll let Barbara talk about how the topic of health came to be.
So as we started to read the interviews and sort of get familiarized with what people were sharing with us, we noticed that a lot of people spoke to how participating in MAP affected their health and well-being. And obviously the studying between links and between language, health, and well-being is a relatively recent field of inquiry, but there have been studies before that have shown how Indigenous people see language as a vital part of belonging to a community and transmitting culture. And we also know of other studies that have found links between language retention and what we sort of refer to as biomedical health measures, such as lower suicide rates or lower rates of diabetes. Now for us, the challenge was, how can we measure, or, and I mean this in the broadest term of the word, but how can we establish a link between language learning and more broader, holistic concepts of well-being beyond the biomedical health measures that are often, I wouldn't say negative, but have a negative connotation of disease. And so we wanted to acknowledge what people were sharing with us. And in order to do that, we had to come up with a different framework to address the data, because we had 138 interviews. So what we found is that the framework of health-related quality of life is actually a really good framework to address that question in this context. This framework is used to look at and better understand self-reported health outcomes compared to biomedical health measures that have been established otherwise. And particularly important is that they're considered responsive to diversity in cultural and socio-ecological contexts. So in this health-related quality of life framework, we're not understanding health and well-being as the absence of disease. And it also allows us, and this is, I think, what we're beginning to understand is really important in this situation, is that it allows us to understand the subjective experience of a person, how their health, how they experience their health, and how they experience their well-being within their community and within their own personal context. Now, the health-related quality of life concept or framework relates to the World Health Organization's definition of health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being. This definition of health and well-being also relates or maps well to the holistic concepts of well-being traditionally held by Indigenous people. So we adopted this framework to further study and better understand what the participants self-reported and shared with us about how MAP affected them with regards to health and well-being. And even though we didn't actually ask any specific questions, are you feeling better, or anything of that, we actually were able to yield six themes from the interview data. The first theme that came up, and that was really the strongest one, is about cultural and spiritual health. We had 27 participants contribute to this theme. And particularly the apprentices reported that through their participation in MAP, they really felt strengthened in their identity. And it's given them a sense of connection and taught them also how to conduct themselves in life and in relation to others. So learning the language has contributed to a feeling of fulfillment and belonging. The beautiful words of Jasko, and she said, "I'm keeping something very precious alive by speaking my language." A second theme that came up was what we would call at this point health outcomes, and we had 10 participants contribute to this theme, where MAP affected the participants' own health status in one way or another. We found that participants were motivated by, while they were participating in MAP, to maintain their general well-being. And that it also provided them with a tool to cope with challenging life events and emotions. So a lot of our participants are also handling family obligations, going to school, they're working. So not only was it challenging to them, but it also gave them a way of maintaining themselves in those situations. In the words of Giselle, she said, "When I take care of my health, I'm a lot better at learning." So it really motivated her to stay healthy while she was in that, because it affected her learning. And then in a small number of cases, they shared that it gave them additional support to recover from substance abuses, that it was the language that pushed them to sobriety and that gave them a sense of who they were.
The third thing that came up was a larger observation by the communities and how the language loss negatively impacted the well-being of the entire community of Indigenous people. We heard that from seven participants, and they were talking about the effects of residential schools and the colonization, both on themselves and on their own communities. So it wasn't just mentors who had gone through residential school, but it was also their children and their grandchildren and the community around them that was broke, the language community was broken down. There were feelings of grief, of shame, embarrassment, and displacement that all came up. The quote that we have here from Giselle, she was talking about this word that she couldn't understand why it was that way, because she said, well, this word that keeps talking about plants, what does it have to do with children? And then she understood that in her language, that part of the word was actually, doesn't just mean a bad misbehaving child, but the language was connecting the misbehavior into being uprooted from the culture, from the language. The fourth thing was the relationship between the commitment to mentor apprentice and the well-being of participants. And we heard that from a lot of the participants, 22 participants contributed to this theme. Like Barbara mentioned, all these participants, they're not getting paid, especially the apprentices. The mentors do get paid. The apprentices don't get paid to do this work, and they all have to work. They all have families, children, family obligations, and just wanting to spend time with their children, friends, and other educational pursuits. Many of the apprentices are also students. So this whole thing, spending 15 to 20 hours a week and doing additional work outside of the mentor time and doing all those additional activities, made the reported fatigue, exhaustion. They had to prioritize spending time with their mentor over other things, like not spending time with their family, not spending time with their friends, not going to soccer games. In some cases, not even doing activities that could even contribute to the biomedical sense of health, like going to walks. But at the same time, many of the participants also said that they felt invigorated and strengthened by the language learning. So we've had participants who mentioned that the only time they had to go to see their mentor was at night after putting the kids to bed and feeling so tired going there, but feeling rejuvenated as they were coming back after the session. So the quote we have here from Ben, and he's learning the language and teaching at the same time at school. He's a language teacher. And that was the exhausting part of it, trying to teach and learn at the same time. Everything that he learns in the sessions, he has to take back to the classrooms. But at the same time, like I said, there was a very, very, a lot of positive results of being an apprentice. And we've heard from 19 participants, not just apprentices, but many apprentices. They felt strong and confident to take leadership roles in their own communities, and they were expected to take those leadership roles. They could see the inspiration they were giving to other people. Many of them were offered jobs and promotions. Some of them were teachers, and then they were asked to be language teachers or offered a job with the band. There was a lot of recognition in the community, a lot of pride in the community of the people who saw them doing it, and their friends. They raised the interest of their friends in the language. And they were asked to lead language culture activities because now everyone knows, oh, that's the language person. And that's a really nice quote from Adam, and he was saying, it brings a huge sense of pride and helps me be an inspiration to anyone else. Until now, we've mostly talked about the apprentices, but we've also seen quite an effect on the mentors and the healing through becoming language mentors. We've heard from 13 participants that contributed to this theme. And so as you know, many of the mentors, the elders, are residential school survivors, and they were forced to feel shame about the language, and they're forced to suppress it and abused for it. And being a teacher and being valued as a teacher of language has really contributed, give a positive feeling to the language. It recreates a language community. All of a sudden they have someone to talk to. Before, many of them didn't have someone to talk to. So it gives them an opportunity to engage with the language, or even to deepen their engagement, even if they were already, some of them were language teachers in school, but if teaching a regular frontal way, and then they felt more engaged at doing the mentor apprentice. And gave them hope. A lot of people mentioned the word hope. And we have the quote here from one of the mentors, Stalpel. And it's a really nice, strong quote, and he said, once again, we have that belief in ourselves that we can be free. The language gives them freedom. Okay, so just a little bit about the takeaways from our research. So strengthening the language has an effect beyond just the use of the language alone. It provides a mechanism to increase well-being in the language learners and in the teachers and in the communities as the communities see this pair and that pair of the mentor and apprentice affect change in the communities around them. And our next steps are to use this theme as a starting point for further research to better understand the health outcomes and possibly both of a mentor apprentice and of language revitalization in general. And if we're going back to the framework that we used, we feel that this can be a promising framework to understand the link between language learning and health outcomes that are not readily quantifiable. So it allows us to involve the participants' self-reports to ensure that the relevant wellness concepts are generated. And the research questions that we're asking are good questions, and they provide answers that have good content validity, but also allow us to truthfully capture the perspectives of the participants, of the Indigenous language learners and the teachers. Aja, Mara.
If I may, I just want to, before we go into our question period, acknowledge our wonderful students, Barbara and Adar. Barbara is very near the end of her program, a master's in linguistics, and Adar is a good way through her PhD in linguistics, and Peter and I are so blessed to work with such wonderful, capable women, and thank you so much for representing the work so well. I noticed a lot of people taking notes and taking pictures, which is wonderful, but just to let people know that we will have a copy of the PowerPoint added to the program, people that are collecting them up. And also to announce that we just found out yesterday, which is very serendipitous since we're all here together in Hawaii, that the paper that we co-wrote on this, that this slide is, this talk is based on, is going to be published later this year in the International Indigenous Journal on Policy Health or Health,
Indigenous Health. Yeah.
So we'll include a link to that in the PowerPoint as well if you want to see the expanded version. And last but not least, I also want to acknowledge Dr. Leanne Hinton, who is here in the room, who is MAP royalty and one of the co-founders of this program. And I have to tell you, we've throughout this week and this conference, we're talking to Evan and finding our keys and just different people that we're connected to and different methods. And I think for Peter and I, MAP was pretty foundational in our, certainly our coming together as research partners. Peter is a mentor in Master Apprentice. I've been an apprentice. I trained with Leanne probably 15 years ago, early 2000s, when I was doing my master's degree, and it really, that word hope that Barbara said, it really brought hope to me as a Cree woman living on the West Coast, outside of my territory, about the possibilities for recovering language in my own family. And it's just really the foundation of our work, so we really want to acknowledge you. Leanne, if you could stand up, and we'll just acknowledge Leanne and her foundation.
It really depended on the pairing. So some pairing, because many of the pairings are relatives, so child and parent, or child or grandchild and grandparent. So they had the common language before. I think everyone had a little bit of trouble at first, but it was a question of adjusting. But many of the pairings who weren't close relatives, many of distant relations. Also, it's not that if it's not a close relative, you can't adjust. They definitely manage to, but it really depends on the dynamic in the pairing, I think. And some of them manage to do it better than others, and some of them run into difficulty.
Maybe I could expand on that. The Master Apprentice Program or Mentor Apprentice Program is actually designed in such a way that the learner takes responsibility for his own learning. Because we know that most native speakers and elders are not themselves trained in teaching a language. And so it's really laid on the learner to make that relationship happen in an effective way for the learner. We can talk more about that.
Yeah. Thank you, Leanne. You really summarized what our impression was.
When
that's a really, really important perspective, and we completely acknowledge that. So I'm just going to just be in dialogue with you for a minute about how we've arrived where we're at. So the first point I would say is that as a team of language activists, that we absolutely acknowledge that our babies and our young children is where it's at for language revitalization. That's where it needs to be at. And my own background is in working with Language Nest and early childhood. That's where I started the inspiration for wanting to help to revive our languages. And why the mentor-apprentice model exists and why we're promoting not necessarily just mentor-apprentice but adult language learning is that what Peter and I have witnessed in community is some of the themes that Barbara and Adar were talking about, which is that shame and devaluing of language that has occurred in so many of our communities. That I can't speak specifically for what's happening in your community, although I do know a little bit about what's going on there. It's very, very common that the language is not being promoted and held up in community. And so why we believe that we need to focus on adult language learning is that we need not only healthy adults who are able to teach the language in the schools and in the language nests, but as some of the themes that Barbara and Adar were talking about, is to be inspirations and leaders for the language in communities. Because what we notice in a lot of the communities that we go to is that there's that lack of adults that are actually either proficient enough or healthy enough to be able to take up those programs and really do the kinds of things you're talking about. But if you have people like that in your community, absolutely, that's where you should be funneling your resources, is towards Language Nest programs and K-4, K-6, K-12 immersion or bilingual programming. If you're able to do that, absolutely. And so Mentor Apprentice or any adult-focused program is for particular language situations where there just are not enough adults in the community that are either proficient enough or healthy enough to be sustaining that kind of programming in the community. So it's not all or, it's not either or, it's just one program that's part of a whole spectrum of programs, and each community, region, and language group has to decide for themselves what's the right approach and the place that they're at with language. The last thing that I just wanted to say though is that a future, well, it's here now, but I would say a future trend where we're heading in language revitalization is also family-based immersion. So immersion focused homes. And Leanne Hinton, again, who's here in the room, brought together 10 or 12 stories a few years ago in a book called Bringing the Languages Home. And I know that with our Senchafin partners, that's another big focus in their community, besides the Language Nest and the K-4 immersion school that they have, is having after-school programs and evening programs focused on parents of young children, and particularly moms of childbearing age, to really try to hook those people into the language and get them interested. And because ultimately we need to have the languages back in our homes. So it's all part of a bigger picture. It's not all one thing, but your comments are absolutely valid. And we really acknowledge the Masu family who's here, and Timmy especially, for his courage and bravery. And we're watching closely what you're all up to, and we're here to support you in any way that we can. Hi. Yes.
We're going to stand this way because it feels awkward to stand on my back. I was just sitting here, and my name is Keke, and we've come together here as a cohort. So if there are others from the Tlingit cohort, I do not. So many of us, Mishish, many of us have saved every dime and dollar that we have to be here. We have sent out letters of request. We've sold fry bread. We've done everything that we can. Many of us are sleeping in one unit together, sharing everything that we have. Because it is true, it's a difficult journey. But by putting a barrier in front of ourselves, by thinking that money is a barrier, has not created any ease. So we remove that barrier. I look at your family, and we offer you Ganesh. Thank you for being brave enough to come. And for those of you that are in this room, that are here representing your language communities, it's those things that give us strength. For us, there is a Tlingit Tundatani, and it's the only way that I know how to explain how I'm feeling over here, sitting here listening. It's the way that we have, the world view that we have, the way that we see the world as Tlingit people. Money is not a value for us. So thank you for bringing the value of wellness to light when we talk about that. You'll see that I have two young men with me. The first one here, this is Lugu Ish. This is my sister's son, this is my nephew. This is a man that was raised by his grandmother, who was a fluent speaker. This is a man that has those values instilled within him. He chose to be here rather than playing in his regional basketball tournament. And he's the high scorer for the team. His value was to be here because there really is a bigger team, our language. He is one of our warriors. His job is not only to be here to get all that information to bring it back to our communities, but it's to be the big brother to this next generation of apprenticing. This is my son, Dedhun. Since he was in my stomach, the language has been his way of communicating and understanding that world. These young men were born with that Tlingit Tundatani. They are well, they are happy, they are successful, they are honor roll students, they are young men that are athletically successful, physically, spiritually, emotionally. They are humble, they are kind and compassionate. And to me, they are valuable, priceless. Our grandparents used to say that our grandchildren were just like our abalone earrings, the most precious thing that we had. So I just encourage you to remember that our values are our children, that money, it'll come and go. Whether or not it ever slides between our fingers, our hands are strong enough to hold on. Strong enough to hold on to Hashuka, our ancestors, and strong enough to continue lifting up Ayat Keijiya, our children. It's for them. So I encourage you to continue coming. And to the young man, to your son. Iku ayah kwan. Iku ayah kwan. You're not alone in this journey. You have many brothers from around the world that are also on the same journey with you. We stood here to offer you encouragement, to offer you the encouragement to look beyond the values that people tell us are important, because you are our most precious belongings. Iku ayah kwan. Nuchish.